Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, pleased to welcome you all to All Sides Weekend, as today we talk about the arts in Central Ohio. We're going to have a spirited conversation here, hopefully some controversy and some blood and guts churning around about the arts in Ohio, and we will be asking for your phone calls, hoping that you too will enjoy the and join in for the conversation. My guest for this program, Janet Chen, is the executive director of Columbus's Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra, and as I understand it, this is your debut on All Sides Weekend. Is that right?
That is true.
I'm happy to welcome you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Cindy Gaylord is the executive producer of WOSU's Art Scene, which is, and she's also the producer of a myriad of art specials on television. And you collaborated with Pro Musica recently on Messiah, did you not?
Absolutely, which was a very successful collaboration. We really enjoyed
it. It was
that.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
And Matt Slabaugh also is joining us for the first time. I appreciate your being here. Matt is the artistic director of the Available Light Theater Company. We're going to have some chat. We're going to take your calls, and we're going to begin with Janet Chen. Here's what I said to you in the lobby, and I've met you a couple of times, but we don't know each other well. I said that when the arts in Central Ohio are discussed, there's all this gloom and doom about all kinds of things. Quality is never an issue. People always say people play, sing, act, dance wonderfully well. But everybody says that Pro Musica is the best-run organization in the city, that the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra has found their marketing niche, that they know exactly what they're doing, and that they're always in the black. Discuss.
Thank you.
How does that happen?
Thank you very much, Chris. That's a very kind thing to say, and we're really, you know, pleased to have maintained, you know, that high level of artistic quality over our 32-year history. I think one of our biggest strengths is Timothy Russell, who co-founded the organization. You know, this was his brainchild when he was a grad student at OSU. He and Richard Early, the other co-founder, basically sat in Tim's living room where his parents still are at here in Upper Arlington, and came up with this idea that this city needed a chamber orchestra. Obviously, at the time, the symphony was, you know, strong and a definite musical force here in Columbus. But, you know, many great cities both have orchestras and chamber orchestras. So, you know, I really feel that that was a formula and the path that we have taken, that we provide a unique experience at the Southern Theater, where we are now, performing similar pieces that the symphony does, but in a different way. So that's, I think, one of the strongest points that we've been able to carry throughout our history. And the other part is really sort of being mindful of our business model. You know, we are
having a business model,
and
having
a business model, exactly, and also really doing the checks and balances needed. I think that any company would routinely do strategic planning, working committees that meet very regularly to ensure that all of our goals are being met, that no one committee is doing something that the other is not aware of. So we're very streamlined in that process. In addition, we have, you know, a great core of board members and volunteers, supporters, and our musicians. We have a really great relationship, I think, with our musicians, which is really, I believe, key. We have to have a mutual understanding of each other's needs in order to do what's best for Columbus.
And some of them have been pretty beaten up in the last few years. So it's that's wonderful that you do have that relationship.
Yes, we try and maintain a very open, honest, transparent relationship, you know, because if one doesn't have the other, it's not going
to
work.
So I go to the Columbus Symphony, and I go to the Cleveland Orchestra, and I go to Cincinnati, and I go to New York. Why should I come to you? What's different? What's different between, you know, we have two orchestras now in the city, and people might say the market's gutted or glutted. How do you, what's your niche? What's your place?
What's our niche? Well, one of the things that we do, I think, very well is our commissioning works. That's something that's part of our mission. It's in our mission. And we have, commissioned a number of fantastic composers, Joan Tower, Michael Doherty, Lyra Albright.
And they come here.
They come here. So that's also an opportunity for Pro Musica to get our name out nationally is, you know, these composers come, they see this great city, they see a great hall, great music. And so that, you know, I think really helps elevate us in many respects. So that's one thing that I think we provide and continue to provide. And the other is, you know, we perform, you know, the Beethoven symphonies, the Mozart symphonies, sometimes the Schubert symphonies. But I think the experience we bring is perhaps something similar from when these composers actually wrote these works. You know, they were written for
smaller
instrumentation. So it doesn't mean that going to the symphony is not a realistic interpretation. It's just a different interpretation. So
and you've created a niche that way through new music and balancing new music
with traditional
music.
Exactly. Terrific. Yeah.
Matt Slabaugh, you are someone I'm very interested in. I've never met you until just 5 minutes ago. I saw you at a conference a number of years ago where there were some well-placed city officials, and you were very adamant in some things that you wanted to say about being an artist in Central Ohio. And I wrote your name down and thought, aha, you know. So first of all, introduce yourselves and tell me about Available Light, which in the last year or so has really crested wonderfully.
Yeah, we've had a really good run recently, and I'm basically from here, and I'm a guy who wanted to have his own theater company. We'd get together with a bunch of friends and, you know, put on a show and do our own thing. We were a bunch of people who had been doing theater in Columbus and had great experiences and wanted to find a way to make great experiences for other people. So the first thing we did really was start to copy everything that Pro Musica did.
I hope everybody's writing things down.
Copyrighted.
No, Pro Musica is a great organization. I love the fact that you highlighted that they're a really well-run organization. And we literally did, in some of our early board meetings when we were first incorporated, sit around and people said, you know, Pro Musica's in the black every year. That's amazing. We have to do that too. And so we do. But, you know, in terms of the organization, what it's about, the secret of basketball, of the great basketball teams, is that it's not about basketball, right? It's about something bigger. It's about something greater. And from the very beginning, we've been about changing the world and contributing to our community, and theater is just our way of doing that. So everybody that's involved in the organization has come because they're attracted to that mission. They're attracted to what we're trying to do. That's reflected in our mission statement, changing the world.
Which is what? What is your mission? Why are you different? What makes Available Light stand out? And it does, in a positive way.
Our mission, in short, we're a fellowship of artists dedicated to building a more conscious and compassionate world by creating joyful and profound theater and contributing to our community.
New theater? New works?
Mostly new works. Yeah, we started out doing almost all new works. We commission a lot from other artists. Actually, Sean Christopher Lewis, a traveling playwright, was on All Sides just a month ago. Mm-hmm. He's somebody we worked with a lot. So we do a lot of new works. We try to talk about issues. We've done big, crazy shows that were really entertaining about things like the economy. And we did a show last year about the environment and compassion. And we've got a show this year called The Food Play, which is, go figure, about food. So that's what we're working on. But it's in our mission statement, it's very clear and very important that the world comes before the theater. We're not creating theater, and we want to change the world. Theater happens to be our way of doing that. One of our prime tenants right now is our Pay What You Want ticketing program, which is exactly what it sounds like. Anybody who comes to the theater can pay whatever they want, any ticket, any seat, all the time. People think that that's crazy, but we've been doing it for about 3 years. In that time, our operating budget has more than doubled, and our attendance has doubled twice.
You perform downtown at the Rife Center, I know, and I think in a few other places as well. Is that right?
We're all over, yeah. The Rife Center is great. Right now we're at the Columbus Performing Arts Center with a show called Hum, which is tonight and tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. That's the place right behind the library. Come and pay what you want to Hum. And we also performed at Mad Lab in their great new space recently, and we used to perform at the Columbus Dance Theater a lot, thanks to the generosity of Tim Veach.
Is that important to you to be in several different sites in different neighborhoods?
Well, it has its advantages and disadvantages. It is important to us because we find that at the different sites we get different audiences and there's different kinds of accessibility depending on where we are.
I'm interested to know, you said you were from Columbus, from this area growing up. Were you ever tempted to do this somewhere else, to leave town?
You know, I was riding my scooter over here today and I figured a question like this might come up. And I'll tell you the truth about being a young, ambitious artist in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, focus of Columbus, Ohio. Good.
In Columbus, Ohio is most of us, I think, somebody's going to call and say, you don't speak for me, and that's fine. But I know a lot of my peers and the people I talk to, you spend about half your time thinking about how can we make this city awesome? How can we turn Columbus into an amazing art city?
Matt Slabaugh, thank you very much. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. And before we take our break, we're going to talk to Cindy Gaylord from Art Scene. You have your sort of hand on the pulse of the art. You do, because you talk to a lot of people and what's going on. And I like to ask you a couple of times a year, what's the temperature out there in terms of activity in the arts, in terms of variety, in terms of the things that you like to cover on Art Scene?
You know, what I really like about the art scene here is that no matter what the economy, there's always going to be people that do art. Now, whether they do it on a grand scale, whether they can find a venue for this, they will always make art. There's a whole subculture of art, there's a middle culture of art, and there's a high culture of art. It's layered after layer after layer. So I think that if you want art, you will always find it. You can find it in small shows, in large shows. So it's not something that is ever going to go away. Now, is it? Do artists, can they make a living at it? And that has always been the hard part. But in Columbus, Ohio, I think there's a lot of good artists that are doing that. So, yeah, I think it's actually a really good place to be.
In the last few years, better, worse, is there different art happening now that you didn't see maybe 3 or 4 years ago?
I think we still have another wave of economic kind of tumultuousness that needs to keep going.
You mean the tsunami or the back?
The tsunami, yes. You know, the back wave of it. I think that artists right now are just trying to figure out what does it all mean. And what does it mean to their art? Because I think right now it's, you know, it either affected them right away, boom, or it's just now affecting the type of grants and the type of work that they can get. So I think we're not done seeing it. And I think, unfortunately, with our new governor, we're going to have another huge hit on art. And I think that is going to be the other side of the tsunami.
Our phone number is 292-8513. That's a 614 number, 292-8513. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are talking about the arts in Central Ohio today with Janet Chen from ProMusica, with Matt Slabaugh from the Available Light Theater Company, and WOSU TV's and the Web's Art Scene producer, Cindy Gaylord. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about a new refashioned art scene, as I understand it, which I think people need to know more about. And I want to know what's coming up with ProMusica, and I'm going to ask you about Hum when we come back from a quick break.
Sunday mornings, while the sun's clearing the horizon, the dew is beginning to evaporate, the surfers are waxing their boards, we are ready for you with news, interviews, books and movies, new music, and a word puzzle. I'm Leanne Hansen. Join me Sunday mornings for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Sunday mornings beginning at 8 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Ohio State's Comprehensive Cancer Center, rated exceptional by the National Cancer Institute. More information about Ohio State's Comprehensive Cancer Center is at cancer.osu.edu.
You're listening to All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. 59 degrees in downtown Columbus. The skies will be clear throughout the day and a high right around 59, partly cloudy tonight and a low of 30 degrees. All Sides Weekend continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
We're back. I'm Christopher Purdy here at All Sides Weekend with Janet Chen from the Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra and WOSU-TV's art scene Cindy Gaylord. We invite your phone calls, 292-8513 or allsides@wosu.org. Cindy Gaylord, we began talking a bit about art scene, and that has been a big success on television for our station, and it's gone all over the place for a couple of years now. It is, as I understand it, being refashioned.
It has been, and this is our sixth season, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes, well, we have been.
I wrote that down.
Oh, yeah, and you write that down. We are a multi-Emmy award-winning show, by the way, which I am very proud of. But we have taken the pulse, basically, of how art is consumed, one, in the media, and how artists can, and art institutions such as Pro Musica, how they can use this media to their advantage, such as if a organization needs some grant materials, right? They always need the video that we do, and I've always been very generous in trying to get that media to them. Well, we looked at this, and we looked at how other cities are doing and how other PBS stations are dealing with their arts programming, okay? And what we came up with was more people want to watch and listen to things on the web now. As much as a dinosaur like me, and maybe like you, Christopher,
more than you,
would like to say that we would like to keep all of our arts programming on TV, people want a lot more access, and they want it immediately. So here's what we've done. We've got a couple of things going. You can find Art Scene on Facebook right now. All of the art stories that we've ever done will be on Facebook eventually. It is not that way right now, but it will be on Facebook, so any artist anytime can find them, and any organization can use them, multi-purpose them. Right now, we also have an arts blog on WOSU.org. We have always had an arts blog, but Art Scene has kind of taken that over.
Yeah, talk about that. Yeah.
Well, what we've tried to do is we are trying to make it a multimedia type of experience for people. You know, as much as I love video, and I grew up in video, I love producing video, I also like to write. I also like to interview people that maybe this isn't a visual story and it doesn't live on video. Well, I've never really had that platform to actually just create maybe a one-time story that's, you know, maybe 600 words that really doesn't have a video kind of component to it. So we're being able to cultivate those type of stories where I can call Catherine Evans over at the museum and say, hey, talk to me for a few minutes about this, about something maybe that is coming up. Case in point, there are archaeologists in Egypt that I have an ancillary kind of relationship with. And my next what I'm working on is a story about artifacts in Egypt that have been vulnerable because of the uprisings, and the art in Egypt that is vulnerable to these uprisings. And that creates this whole conversation of, A, who owns the art? Is it the culture that owns the art? Is the people there that owns the art? There are a lot of organizations nation or worldwide that are putting pressure on them to make sure that they preserve the art. And yet this art can also help feed the people who definitely need to be fed in Egypt. Egypt has two classes, the very rich and the very poor. And that's one of the problems that they've had, is there is no middle class. So anyway, that's one of those things that I have no video for, right? But I think that is a really interesting topic. And who owns art? Who owns the archaeology that's there? So that type of thing.
You mean the physical specimens? You mean the actual pieces?
Absolutely.
And the other point, I think a flip side of that is, how do you make the thought behind the physical specimens accessible to a lot of people?
Absolutely.
Janet, is what Cindy's talking about I guess, increased platforms
yes.
that we hadn't dreamt about 4 or 5 years
we're
ago?
We're calling it transmedia. That's the new buzzword.
Really? Okay,
it's transmedia. It used to be multimedia, but now it's transmedia.
How do you think that might work for Pro Musica, or do you think do you have to embrace it?
I think we definitely do. I think because if we don't, then we're not being mindful of what our audience is and what our community wants, and what they're looking for. You know, it's always a beast with classical music. There's always the whole, you know, classical music is dying sort of conundrum. But, you know, the way we look at it is the art form is the music for us. And it's just figuring out a way of how we can deliver this music that remains true to its essence, but delivering it and maybe marking it in a way that our community can immediately grab onto and provide it in an accessible way that is meaningful. So yeah.
I will give you an example, a wonderful example that we collaborated
on.
We went in and filmed Pro Musica's community Messiah. It's sung by community choirs and the public, right? Mm-hmm. We also had a opportunity to send some clips to Jim Lehrer, the NewsHour, right? And they did a huge mashup of all the Messiahs in the nation.
Yeah.
You can see that online. And it's great. We have like two or three clips in there, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's one of those things that I think it brings in the wonder of the arts again. How do you create this wonder? And that's why I like a lot of the we call them flash mobs. You know, they're supposed to be really these surprise kind of infiltration of a market or a mall, and people are singing opera. But you know, if you go there and you are a part of that, it just brings that music right back home. Mm-hmm. It makes it personal, and it makes it so thrilling again. It's not this performance where you have to sit down and, yes, wow me, darn it, because I you know, paid for this this ticket. It is this wonderful, unexpected experience, and I think that's what transmedia does for us.
Transmedia now means, okay, we know about TV, radio, and film, but we're adding to the list. And when you say transmedia, I'm still not sure how they're going to mesh and overlap. I'm on a learning curve myself, but I'm excited about it. But go ahead.
It's an evolution. Okay, yeah. Think about it. You have the web. You have YouTube. Okay, then you have applications on your phone. Okay, so everyone is now getting an app. And what does that do? That allows you, let's say, Pro Musica, to have an application on their phone, and then I could feed them clips. So the minute that comes up on their phone, I could get, you know, a clip of Messiah or something like that. So it's immediate. People want things immediately. They don't want to just wait to get to their radio or even to sit down in front of their television. They want it right there in front
and
of them.
And they want it when they can use it.
And they can.
Right.
Not
always at 8 o'clock Saturday night.
Right. That's right. And I have to say my viewing habits have changed because of this. And I feel like I am more enriched in the arts because of this, because I can call up YouTube videos of artists and understand them just a little bit more.
Yeah. It's like, how did we survive without DVR?
Right.
Right, I don't have it yet, but that's on my list to do. I miss Judge Judy because I don't have DVR anyway. Anyway, I'd be interested from hearing people out there who are sort of like me, wondering where they fit in with the new technologies. Really, give us a call, 292-8513, or if you're technically savvy, which I'm not, give us a masterclass here when you call in. 292-8513 is our number. Pro Musica also has a lot of recordings that you've done on your own. How many? About 8 or 9?
We have 10 that are produced right now.
Produced mm-hmm. right now. So there seems to be the ability now to play those in more places. I shouldn't say this, but then radio. I mean, it's all over the place.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it kind of ties back to what Cindy was saying, you know, about whose art or who owns that art. And most of our, a good number of our recordings are those of pieces that we commissioned. And part of our effort was to be able to preserve these works, because who knows, you know, 50, 100, 200 years down the road, where are these works going to end up? But to be able to archive them in the manner of a produced CD is, you know, what we feel is our way of you know, being responsible for that art down the road.
You know, one thing, it's kind of ironic. I think that when people sometimes go to a live event and they sit in the theater at 8 o'clock Saturday night, there exists a fourth wall that goes away when you have it in the palm of your hand when you want it.
Absolutely.
I think that wall, and it by rights, I think in some ways of thinking it should be the other way around, but I don't think it is. I think really, you know, you sit there and you think you have to behave and you have to be a certain way.
Think about it this way. Yeah. I look at it as it goes from being an event to an experience.
Oh, that's great.
An event is somewhere where you sit down and you have that fourth wall. An experience is where you actually look at the art, or you listen to the art, you hear the art, that type of thing. So to me, it's – and I'm a nascent consumer of this. I'm definitely not in the young category of people that are just consuming this right and left.
You are to me.
But but I have found that once you start, it becomes – okay, it's a gateway drug. It's one of those things that
a gateway drug
to art. And I'm okay with that. I'm
okay
saying that.
Are you all writing this down? I like that very much.
But it's one of those things that you think, case in point, Google just came out with a way to go into like MoMA. Have you checked this out yet? Google will actually allow you. They have mapped, just like they did with the streets. They've mapped MoMA. And they've mapped, I think, 6 or 7 other museums that you can go in and look at a painting. You can get so close, you can actually see the brushstrokes. Hmm. Now, having seen just a few of those paintings, I can tell you it doesn't completely recreate that experience. But I tell you what, it gets a lot closer than the stuff that I see in books. Mm-hmm. For me, it's just you can see the environment in which
texture.
It's hung, the texture, you can come back, you can go forward. Mm-hmm. It's really a great experience. You should try it.
I will try it. Thank
Definitely.
You very much for that. Well, here's a question for both of you. Let's start with Janet. When you plan your future seasons of concerts and programming, are you now programming with what Cindy and you are talking about in mind, about the multi-platform, the transmedia
yes,
model?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And how do you do that?
Oh, it takes a lot of creative juices flowing through our minds. But it also, you know, we have to talk to, like I always say, you have to talk to your audiences and you have to talk to people that come to your concerts, because part of it also is, you know, you don't also want to upset those that go because they like the way it was or the way it is or the way they're familiar. So there is a very fine line, I think, that often we have to walk when, you know, programming, planning for concerts and that sort of thing. But, you know, it's all about talking with our marketing folks. Okay, so if we're going to plan, let's say next year, a concert that focuses on pieces written, inspired by artwork, whether it's a James McMillan piece or whether it's pictures at an exhibition, what can we do to elevate that experience, either from a visual component, drawing in from, you know, folks from the museum or CCAD, and also education is a big part of that, drawing in students and how they can help, you know, marketing efforts and creating this sort of transmedia, which is a brand new word that I've never heard of till this morning. So
I'm so
did you
happy
make that
to,
up?
I did not. I went to a conference on it.
Okay. It's a great word.
It's
a great
word.
You know what? Probably. Here's one. My
blog
question
on that,
for you.
Will you?
I will. I'll blog on that. Janet, my question is this. You know, 15, 20, 30 years ago when you had an organization that were commissioning new works, you were commissioning works that maybe didn't fold in another kind of artwork,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
What does that allow you to do when you start looking at other artworks to create your own?
A lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot. And I think just in recent years, we have felt comfortable in letting ourselves go down that path. I mean, I think Pro Musica has always been been innovative. We feel that we're sort of trying to, you know, be 2 or 3 steps ahead because of these trends that keep changing. Yeah. But, you know, those are things that absolutely we're thinking of. So if we're going to commission a work, which takes 2 or 3 years, mind you, composers need their time to write. You know, there is a lot of planning involved to ensure what other outlets can we bring in to make this a successful piece.
Well, let me give you a specific example, and I want to walk you through it for just a second. Thurber Dogs,
mm-hmm.
the Peter Schickele, and that was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
You know, how much kind of influence do you have as an organization on what he does? Or do you just let it go and say, this is your topic, this is what we want to do, and bring it back? How much kind of give and take is there?
There has to be give and take. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Thurber's Dogs that you just described, you know, we commissioned a piece by Peter Schickele, also known as PDQ Bach, to write this work to celebrate James Thurber's 100th birthday. And this was like in the mid-90s, I believe. Right. And so that was done. And just like you said, okay, we're bringing back works that were commissioned before, but how do you fold in other mediums? So a few years ago for our 30th anniversary, what we did is we performed that piece but added the layer of animation. And we did that with actually OSU's ACAD department, which was a phenomenal project and so much fun.
Collaboration, absolutely.
And the students, there were grad students who did the animations of the Thurber Dog drawings that the piece was actually based on. It's six movements. It was amazing. And Art Zine was great to have been able to feature that as one of the programs. So to present that, 10, 15 years later in this new medium, in this new format, people heard this work, but in a completely different experience. Not that one was better than the other, but it was just a different way.
Well, it was music plus. I mean, it was, and in fact, that's not even a very good term. I mean, it became a different experience, but certainly no less viable than what it had been just, I don't mean to say just hearing it played in a concert because that's not right either, but I'm just saying it was something different
right.
and something, but you've whetted the appetite now of the public. People come to ProMusica with different expectations that they might go somewhere else, which I guess is good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that's really exciting for you.
It is exciting. It is, absolutely.
What about this trend that one hears about? People are blogging or texting during performances or Twittering during performances. Do you find that happening? Is that useful for the buzz of your own organization?
We have had a number of discussions about that. I know that many groups in New York are doing that. And you know, we have, when I go to a movie and the person sitting next to me has their, screen on and it's blinding me, I don't like that. So how does that translate into the concert hall? We've had a number of those discussions. We think that we need to take those things step by step. Step by step, perhaps one of the things obviously we're doing is being on Facebook and Twittering about, the concerts or perhaps things that are happening while the concert is going on, but doing it in a controlled way.
Well, that's interesting because is it going to change the way we listen? And I think maybe all of these transmedia does change the way art is going to be perceived. I'm not going to change my habits because I'm not who you're talking to. I'm older than that demographic. And I'm not saying this is a bad thing at all. I'm simply asking the question, is my daughter who's 20 going to perceive something differently than I would next week?
Mm-hmm.
Probably yes.
Yeah, I think so.
So that will inform the way new art is created, I would think, and presented. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some great work, I believe, in the Houston Symphony. I'm not exactly sure about this, but they were trying to come up with an app that while you are listening to the symphony, you can look at your smartphone and get a lot more information about the piece than you could ever print in a program.
That's San Francisco. And Roland Valliere, who runs the Columbus Symphony, has been a big
proponent
mover behind
that.
In fact, he was somebody I think who either invented or worked on that.
Right.
We need to take a break for 90 seconds. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Our number is 292-8513. You can also send us an email, allsides@wosu.org. With Janet Chen from ProMusica and from Cindy Gaylord from TV's Art Scene. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear the questions you wish you could have asked to people like Tom Kenny, the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants.
Did it help to hear what your voice sounded like on helium? Did you learn something about your voice you didn't know before?
Yeah, I learned that I don't really need the helium.
Because it's pretty easy to flick that switch and go right up there.
The most interesting people in show business on Fresh Air.
Came in late.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the battle between unions and statehouse Republicans, a proposal to expand Ohio's private school voucher program, and Governor Kasich's private jobs plan moving forward, all that and more. Tune in for Columbus on the Record. It's tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the Central Ohio Trauma System, working with community partners to make Central Ohio a safer place to live. Details about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the Central Ohio Trauma System are at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
59 degrees in downtown Columbus, a nice day today with some sunshine. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 30 degrees. Mostly sunny for Saturday and a high of 45. All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're back with Janet Chen from ProMusica and Cindy Gaylord from ArtScene, which is also multi-platformed in its presentations now. And talk a bit about the new arts blog.
The arts blog, okay, I'm going to tell you where to find it first because it's good. A little hard. We know here at WOSU, by the way, that we need to help you, the viewer and the listener, to find it a little bit easier. Here's the way you find it. You go on WOSU.org. In the upper right-hand corner is a little search function. Type in arts blog. It'll take you right there. Okay. The Arts Blog now has a lot of different things. One, we post all of our stories that are video-based, audio-based, anything is going to go on the Arts Blog. If you, for some reason, forget that, and that's fine, you're driving, don't pull over and take notes, just find Facebook. Facebook right. is easy, okay? ArtScene on Facebook, friend us, that'll give you a connection back to our Arts Blog. So we are trying to get you stories that are media appropriate. So if I have a video story that I want to show you some really great visuals, I'm going to make it a video story. If it's a written only story, I've got a series called Art Matters that I can talk to because I'm so lucky in this job. I can call people up like Catherine Evans over at the museum and ask her silly questions about art. And that I'm just going to put into a written word piece. So we're going to try to give you much more of a rich experience with art here and knowing that video is just one component of that.
And when you say written pieces, my question would be, could somebody listening to this program contribute to the Arts Blog?
Well, at this point, no. And the reason I say that is that we're still making this up as we go along. Transmedia was something that was introduced to me.
5 minutes ago.
5 minutes ago. No, it was about a month ago. And we are trying to figure out actually how to make a magazine online. So this is not
interesting.
The way you say is Arts Blog. I am looking at it as web reporting.
Right.
So, yes, I am looking for really good reporters about arts that would like to volunteer their time and work for WOSU.org. But I want to be able to have a little bit more control. And it's not necessarily a blog. It's web reporting. So it's a different way of looking at it.
Here's what we have to do. I have to do. I have to get away from thinking of a blog as just writing.
Reading.
Exactly.
You know, I have to get away from that.
Exactly.
That was true when blogs were invented, I guess.
That was true 15 minutes ago.
Right, exactly.
But
not anymore.
Now. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
That's
exactly.
Great.
So.
How are you blogging, Janet Chen? Are you personally, I know a lot of us do, but as institutionally, is that something that
ProMusica is blogging. We do have a blog, and we started this blog very education-based. We actually have what we call a student advisory board. It's kind of like a teen council, but it's a group of about 17 students comprised of high school upperclassmen and college freshmen and sophomores. Function basically kind of like our board of trustees. They have a chairman, a vice chairman, secretary, and they advocate on behalf of ProMusica. I mean, they're reaching to students and, you know, parents and teachers in their communities to talk about not only ProMusica, but why music and art need to exist here. And it's just been so fun. I mean, if you come to our concerts, you'll see them in our lobby. They greet you. They put on their own little gala. So I'm kind of digressing a bit, but
no, this is great. Yeah.
But it started with the student advisory board, and they helped create our current blog. They're able to speak and talk in a language that could reach out to potential audiences to introduce them to the organization. So that's been going on for a few years, and now we're actually launching into a new music director search. So we're finding new opportunities of how we can blog about this process and getting our audiences and community invested in that process.
But go back to the young people's thing, because you've really gotten my attention. You have a bona fide board made up of Older students.
Yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
17, 18 years old,
yep.
who really are given an active voice
yes.
as representatives of Premier. They're part of the family.
Yes.
They're not just lip service.
No.
Okay,
no.
So I pound this, and Cindy pounds this to arts managers all over the country. You've got to get young people involved, and they all say, oh, it's very hard. You can't deal with the public schools because they're too busy and they're short-staffed, and yet you're doing it. How did that happen?
We work very closely with teachers. I mean, we have another education program called Musicians in Schools. We're in about our 11th year doing that. And over the years, we have really tried to build a trusting and mutually beneficial relationship with these schools, administrators and teachers. And out of that came this idea of the Student Advisory Board, is how can we get these students to feel invested. I mean, these are students who either enjoy music, take music, like music, but maybe they'll become lawyers or doctors, a profession that's not music. But how can we get them to serve on boards in the future, arts boards in the future? And how can we find a way to get them to participate down the road? So we're trying to find a way to cultivate that from an earlier stage in their lives.
And I think the key to that is you take them seriously. You pay attention.
Yes.
It's not just, you know.
Yeah. We've had them do presentations at our board meetings. They meet monthly. They have an agenda. They work closely with our education manager on planning their own events. They attend other education programs that we have.
Have you heard about this before, Cindy Gaylord, organizations doing something like that? Why isn't everybody doing this? It sounds like a great idea.
Well, I think you have to have a really good education director in the first place. And okay. And forgive me, I've forgotten your education director's name.
Right now it's Logan Kelly.
Okay. You guys have had a long run of really good education directors who I've worked with before. And I think part of that is, the arts that are highly demanding create students who are very disciplined. And I think that when you start from such a young age with your Artists in Schools kind of program, mm-hmm. you get people wanting to work with you. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a very hard thing to cultivate, but you've been able to do that.
But you can't just take them to the show anymore and then take them back to class.
No.
That's what happened when I was done. And it was a big deal, but this is a long time ago. But these days, I don't think you can take a fifth grader or a 10th grader to something, and then they go home and that's it. There's no continuity. There's no reason for that kid to want to go back.
No. We talk a lot about enrichment. And if I could give one or two quick examples of what Cindy just described. Logan, who is our current education manager, she was a student at OSU studying flute with Kathy Vorst-Jones. And, you know, Kathy emailed me one day and she just said, you know, I've got this great student. She really loves the arts. She loves music. And just if there's anything that you have for her to do to be involved, can you let me know? So she came and interned with us one summer, and then we got the Student Advisory Board started. She had been a member for 2 or 3 years, and actually her senior year at OSU was the chair of the group. And she came to me and she said, I really want to pursue arts administration. And is there anything that...
Okay, so who does that in high school?
Right.
Who
really,
does that?
Really,
I want to pursue arts administration.
Right,
well, gosh darn good for her.
Right. So, and you know, we had an opening and she's been involved with the organization a number of years, knows essentially our programs. And, you know, what a great way we thought to try and give back, you know, for all the time and all the hours that she gave to ProMusica as a student. So that's just one example, I think, of how we're trying to, you know, it's not all music-based, but it's the greater part, the management part of what I think makes orchestras and arts organizations successful. And another example is a gal, her name's Cassie Wetherill. She was a student at Gahanna, played with us in our Messiah sing-alongs for a number of years, went to Capitol, interned with us, was a Student Advisory Board member, and she's now a teacher, I think, at Grove City. But she's now bringing her students to our conference.
Yeah, see, that's how it works. You pass the baton.
You
that's
pass
right.
the baton.
Absolutely.
And you have to do that because, you know, we have limited resources.
You have to do it, but you are doing it.
And I think that, you know, the bottom line, though, is that your ProMusica is so accessible. I think even before we talk about transmedia, you know, I think that you and your musicians have made this culture of accessibility. And that is the nugget that not every organization has.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I have to say our musicians are you know, wonderful in that regard because they make themselves accessible. If you come to a Pro Musica concert, from the moment you walk into the hall, we try and give you the best experience possible. It's a smile, it's a hug, it's a hi. And then you sit down, and one of our musicians, every concert, will come out and talk to the audience about themselves for 3-4 minutes. And it just creates, you know, it breaks down the barrier of, oh, I don't know who these people are, and, you know, all I know is they're...
Am I going to like this?
Yeah.
Is it weird?
Yeah, is it weird? You know, who are these people? But that breaks the barrier.
I need to talk about, we have 9 minutes left to a program, accessibility, because we do talk about this. We have a message on Facebook from Mark. Mark writes, one problem with the arts in Central Ohio is the location of some of them. I like the museum in Cosi and some more, but some parts of town seem a little risky to go to. I don't know if the downtown really is.
Downtown?
That sort of
really?
Radius, the Ohio Theater, the Southern, the Rife Center, you know, the museum, et cetera, Cosi.
Maybe 20 years ago, but
I would disagree with that now.
I would say it's more an accessible, an issue of accessibility as far as parking and the experience of being downtown. I mean, Christopher, you and I have talked about this ad nauseum, but when I go downtown, I want to have dinner beforehand and dessert afterwards, and it's very hard to find those things anymore. Mm-hmm. You have to go up to the Short North, and I think that's why the Short North is prospered
because
it
German
is
village.
Or German
yeah.
village.
Right. You have to go one way or the other. But you can't get it where you are.
You can't stay there. So I think that for me, that's the issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wasn't sure if risky meant safety risky or if that's what they're thinking about.
Well,
but there's always. We have police, if safety is a concern.
He said that it seemed a little risky to go to. Maybe we can just reassure Mark and his friends that really it's
come
not.
Downtown.
Come downtown.
Come downtown. I don't think it's as risky as you think. I think that, here's the thing is now that WSU is at Cosi, I spend a lot more time downtown, right? Get to know downtown. During the daylight hours, then you know where the parking is. Then when you know where the egresses are, you can get in and out. It's not as hard as you think.
What about the future? Okay, we've talked about how the experience for the consumer, there's that word, or the listener is changing, that it's not listening and watching anymore. It's going to be the combination of all. Do you think, you've addressed this a little bit, but I want to expand about how this will create new art, maybe art forms we don't know about. Performance art is a 15-year-old concept, which is new in the art. Mm-hmm. That's baby steps. Mm-hmm. Do you see that happening, and do you see the audience coming with it? And what does somebody my age do? He figures out. He stays home and figures out what DVR means.
Well, I can take one of the things that we do to address that is collaborations. Collaborations, I think, is key. It stretches each organization to think outside the box. In March, we're doing a collaboration with the Columbus Gay Men's Chorus and the Columbus Children's Choir, doing a performance at the Lincoln Theater, presenting works that probably you won't see being performed very often. I mean, how often do you have a city that has such unique 3 arts groups? So that's one way I think you can build accessibility is find collaborators to work with you. Franklin Park is another great collaborator of Pro Musica, and we've worked with the museum. So I think those are ways, you break down those barriers.
I'm starting to hear Lincoln Theater more from people than I did a year ago. Mm-hmm. It's an absolutely beautiful facility. And now when you say you have the Gay Men's Chorus, the Children's Chorus, Lincoln Theater, that's 3 collaborations.
Exactly.
With you. Is the Lincoln Theater changing the face of the arts in Central Ohio? Is it contributing? Is it making any difference?
I'm sure it is. I mean, it definitely has revived an area that I believe, wanted to be revived. And to bring people down in that area, I think, is only a great thing.
The Near East Side, as you know, because you're preparing a TV documentary on it, was a magnificent place to hear music and to be with people up until 40 or 50 years ago when the interstate cut it in half. But the history of that neighborhood, can you talk about that program a little bit, the King Lincoln program?
It is part of our Columbus Neighborhood Series. It's coming up this, I believe, in April. Forgive me, I don't know exactly the date, but Brent Davis, who is the head of content, is actually down at COSI right now editing. And it is really about the history of the King Lincoln District. Now, he would know a lot more about it than I do, but I know that the arts did have a fabulous, deep-rooted culture there, talking about Amina Robinson,
everybody
Elijah
came
Pierce,
there.
Everyone came there. The black artists that the jazz artists that went downtown could not play there after hours, so they went back to all of the, and the Lincoln Theater was one of them. So we all kind of know those types of stories. What I am interested in is really, I am hoping that the city can go through and build the cap, which is right, the cap over the highway right near the Lincoln. And I'm hoping that that happens because I think that the Short North only was enhanced by the cap that they created. And I think that would really help just visually start making it part of downtown again instead of just cutting it off geographically. And I think that was the biggest problem, being cut off geographically.
Right. Are those discussions on the table, do you know?
I don't know. Okay. I'm so ancillary to all of the political goings on, but I think in a lot of ways. But I think that is the one huge step for that neighborhood, that if we could get the cap going and just feed it right into the Lincoln Theater, then I think that we can at least do a little bit of a favor for that neighborhood.
Here's another Facebook comment from John. He says, I live downtown. According to our police liaison, it is one of the safest areas of the city. In addition, there are numerous restaurants within 2 to 4 blocks of the theaters. People in Columbus just need to walk a little more. Okay. There are a whole cluster on Gay Street alone, and there are others nearby. So, yep. John, thank you for that. I tend to agree with that. I myself love going downtown.
Absolutely. And, John, I am so sorry. I've totally forgotten about my lovely Tip Top experience. I love that restaurant. I absolutely love their green beans.
Fries.
Oh, sweet potato fries.
All right. Now,
absolutely.
Wait a minute. Okay. Free advertising. But I just wanted to ask you, we only have a couple minutes left. There's a new administration in the State House. I'm just stating a fact. It is now, and this is happening nationally, and it happens every 4 or 5 years. It's time to beat up the National Endowment for the Arts, and it's time to do all that. Any new administration is going to be dicey in terms of the arts in the early days of that administration. Janet Chen, when you come back to this program, as I pray you will, say in a few months, what conversation are we going to have about that, do you think?
About
government and the arts, about support of the arts, about the temperature in the community locally because of the political situation. And people,
What's your best prediction,
What's
Janet?
Your best prediction, Janet?
Well, if I had my fortune teller ball, I do hope it's going to be better. I know the news with the NEA has scared many, and for us, we've received NEA funds over the years, and how they fund the Ohio Arts Council, which is so critical to the, it's lifeblood of many arts organizations in this state, let alone Columbus. So, we know that we need to keep educating our senators and talking about what great good art does for a community. If you think about years and years ago when societies and places in Europe were going through plague and death and war, what survived? It was art and music and all of that. So, I think we need to think about what that can do.
In our last 2 minutes, very quickly, Cindy Gaylor, what's coming up for you in Art Scene?
Oh, gosh. We have a lot of stories that are coming up. Let me quickly. You said 2 minutes. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you only get one of those because Janet's here.
Okay. All right. And, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to plug Art Scene on Facebook. We've been able to go to the Columbus Museum a few times to look at their new exhibitions there. There's one on painting and photography right now that Christopher and I actually went and looked at. We are trying to turn this stuff over a lot quicker. And Art Scene used to be a monthly program. Now it's, I'm hoping, a weekly kind of presence.
So, WOSU.org/Art Scene. I've been asked to say that.
No. Okay. Don't say that.
Okay.
Don't say that. That is an old thing.
All right.
Okay. Go to WOSU.org. Search Arts Blog. You'll find it. Easiest way to do it is Facebook. Just go
to Facebook.
Friend Art Scene on Facebook.
Thank you very much. Janet Chen, I think you're bringing Mozart to town soon.
We are bringing Mozart in March.
Okay.
With Caroline Goulding, a young violinist. But also tomorrow, Saturday, we will be at the Josephinum, which is our second home. All for strings. Concertmaster Katie McClain and principal cellist Mark Boskovitz put together this fantastic program in a beautiful venue.
Great place
and
to hear
music.
And
I've been there. You've
beautiful
got to go.
Place.
Great
You've
acoustics.
Got to go.
Great
yeah.
place. I thank you both, Janet Chen, Executive Director of Pro Musica Chamber Orchestra. I am going to buy you a university to have you run it for arts management programs. And Cindy Gaylor, the WOSU-TV Art Zine Executive Producer, now on Facebook. Go on Facebook. Thank you, Amy Jurevich, our producer. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.